Picture this. A recording studio somewhere far, far away.
You butter.
Say, kids, what time is it?
It's time for
the Merry White House Experience. Whoa! Thank you. Right, now it's come to our notice that many people have this program on just in the background. They don't really pay any attention to it. I mean, they could be doing anything. Having sex. Committing adultery. Hello, darling, I'm home. 15,000 people all over the country have just leapt into cupboards. I'm David Baddiel, and this is Punt and Dennis.
With the Euro elections due on June the 15th, the Merry White House Experience set out to explore this strange institution, which affects all our lives so heavily, yet remains enigmatic, inscrutable, and bloody boring. To explain, here's our foreign correspondent.
And you are a spear, no skin, you are a nice being a way, or could I speak the way, you are a spear, then you are Duran Duran.
But he's foreign, so that's not a lot of help. So let's start with Mrs. Thatcher and her dislike of Ted Heath, who represents the EEC, or embarrassing ex-colleague. It was Ted who, along with his brother Hampstead, got Britain into the common market.
Dear, oh dear, never mind. What Mrs. Thatcher fears is a United States of Europe. This is unlikely ever to happen. There are a number of differences between Europe and the United States. In Europe, we don't have a common language, we have no overall presidency, and we don't always have crap-heavy rock ballads at number one. Instead, we have Jason Donovan, who is actually the offspring of Donovan, the 60s singer, and Jason, the dead cat from Blue Peter. It's not known from which one he inherits his singing voice. After 1992, there will be one single market in Europe. It will be in Amsterdam on Wednesday afternoons.
After 1992, national frontiers will effectively cease to exist. It's fortunate this didn't happen 25 years ago, since it would have made Steve McQueen's motorbike bit in The Great Escape look distinctly unimpressive. In 3 years' time, national boundaries will become as rare in Europe as a sign saying, Italy welcomes careful drivers.
Why is it proving so hard to unify Europe? The answer, of course, is that Europe has never been united, ever since the earliest Indo-European tribes migrated west of the Danube and settled into different groups, Germanic, Hellenic, Slavic, Gallic, Iberian, and one bloke who founded Luxembourg.
Will Europe ever unite? There is no doubt that we are gradually ridding ourselves of the racial stereotypes which have hampered our understanding of each other. For years, the British have thought of the Germans as a humourless, blonde-haired race who wear ridiculous shorts. Slowly, we are coming to realise that this is exactly what the Germans are. Other nations, however, we are coming to know better.
Only last week, the BBC announced that they had sold Allo Allo to French TV, which is a bit like selling Midnight Express to the Turkish Tourist Board.
And the British and Spanish are very close. They send Ballesteros here to play golf. We send thousands of lager louts to vomit on their beaches while dancing to the birdie song.
There will also be a change in jokes. After 1992, the European joke will be standardised and it will run as follows.
An Englishman, an Italian and a Frenchman go into a boulangerie. And a barman says, Guten Tag, meine Herren, was willen Sie? Et l'homme dit, my wife's gone to the West Indies. And the barman says, Jamaica? And the man says,
Duran Duran.
And now it's time for the character assassination experience. This week, Nigel Lawson.
Nigel Lawson was conceived on 11th of June 1931. The family doctor predicted an easy birth.
Oh my God, can't you open them any wider, Mrs. Lawson?
Sorry, that was a tape of the conception. The family doctor predicted an easy birth.
Great news, Mrs. Lawson, there's three of them.
Triplets!
No, chins.
The doctor's incorrect prediction was the first of many associated with Nigel Lawson. At the age of 3, his doting parents talked of the sunny future their son might enjoy.
You know, I think Nigel's going to grow up to be a slim, athletic man without any moles on his face.
Yes, and you know, I think everybody's going to like him.
Immediately following school, Nigel went to stay with his aunt, who lived in Newcastle. For the north of England, it was a time of poverty, hardship and mass unemployment, so they were all very pleased when Nigel moved back to Oxford. His tutor recalls those halcyon days.
Well, I think one of the things that shaped Nigel Lawson was the time he spent in the Bodleian Library.
He used to read economics there.
No, he used to lie under the dome until his stomach set.
Ah.
In the 60s, many famous people came to Nigel for his almost clairvoyant ability. Not many of his predictions from this time are known, although it is widely thought to have been Nigel who, in 1963, advised John F. Kennedy to buy a convertible. In 1976, Lawson wrote a book called The Power Game. This is because he views the economy as a big game, like Monopoly, and in which he makes up the rules as he goes along.
Now I'm going to read my chance card. Yeah. If you earn over 100 grand a year, collect another 40. Banker, banker, can I collect in Monopoly money? It's stronger against the dollar.
As Chancellor of the Exchequer, Lawson has continued his penchant for prediction, leading many to consider him a latter-day Nostradamus, because, like Nostradamus, his predictions are obscure, pretentious and invariably wrong. Although, interestingly, there is one passing reference in the works of Nostradamus which some modern scholars believe may just allude to our present Chancellor.
Book 12, line 998. Watch out for that fat bastard Lawson. He knows not his ass from his elbow.
Finally, we'd like to tell you about Nigel Lawson's worst ever prediction. 3 months ago, he stated categorically that Morris Minor's Marvellous Motors would be funny. Good night.
In football, whenever a team from the south plays a team from the north, the southern fans always shout out, "What's it like to lose your job?" Just once, it would be beautiful if all the northern fans with one voice were to shout back, "It's terrible, your whole expectation from life diminishes and you lose all self-respect."
Picture this.
And now the Skint Video Experience brings you Simple Minds, featuring their lead singer, Jim Really Cares.
My manager said to me, there's money to be made from other people's suffering and you'll be well paid. With incisive lyrics and they rhyme as well. Oh, it's sad and it's bad and it's terrible. I was at this free lunch to combat poverty. Sitting next to me was a Chilean refugee. I gave him my album, said you like the title track. He said, I'd rather be tortured than listen to this cack. Oh, I'm dreading the day when Mandela gets free. Cause the first thing he'll do is come looking for me. Along with Tutu and Biko, of course. Nothing sells records like a really good cause.
Okay, Jim, take it away.
Goodbye, Philip. Good night, Mary. Fly away, Peter. Fly away, Paul. Good night, John Boy. Good night, Grandma. Good night, Granddad. Good night, Jimbo.
Hello, and tonight I'd like to review a triumph of modern literature, which is obviously responsible for the plummeting level of literacy in this country. It goes under the title of Just 17, which I assume is the number of words you need in your vocabulary to be able to understand it. I think that Shakespeare would be revolving in his grave at the speed of light if he caught sight of this. And if there was a Just 17 version of one of his famous speeches, it would go something like this. Oh, Romeo, don't blank me. Because I want to have some kissy-kissy stuff because you're a pervy hunk. Well, I suppose looking at the magazine, really, we should start with the cover, which shows a picture of a blonde 12-year-old wimp with the caption, "Why do 4,381 girls fancy this boy?" Perhaps because he's a pervy hunk, we ask ourselves. No, apparently he was voted Just 17 Male Model of the Year. His prize is 500 squiddly diddlies worth of clothes. Don't ask me what that means. From Top Man, which is apparently a stonking good prize. Well, you give a typewriter to a chimpanzee and I suppose they're eventually going to come up with a word like stonking, aren't they? And this man gets surprise, as I said, of clothes from Top Man. Yum. The Arthur Mullard of the male fashion world, I think. But we should bear in mind that this is actually quite an appropriate prize because Jimmy, our winner, has a very romantic job indeed. He's a clerk for a central heating company in Dulwich and is going out at the moment with Donna, with whom, of course, he is deeply in LUV. When he first met her at the disco, she apparently blanked him. Personally, I don't agree with that sort of behaviour on your first date, but that's tits for you, isn't it? And I think, actually, the kind of behaviour in Just 17 may well be encouraged by the variety of phone lines that they have offering advice on such essential topics as how do you score at snogging and boys' bodies a few useful hints. I phoned this last number, actually. Unfortunately, it was unobtainable, like most boys' bodies are at my age, I suppose. And then, of course, we came to the quiz. A real creep asks you out for a date. How do you refuse? A, pretend to be violently sick. B, say you're busy for the next 400 years. Or C, pretend you're foreign. Well, actually, I wouldn't refuse. I think a shag's a shag wherever you get it.
Now, which of you punks remembers this?
Oh, yes, think you're so clever, sitting there with your ridiculous clothes and your hair a stupid colour. Yes, go on, swear again, shock me.
Oh, bugger off, you stupid git.
Neil Kinnock's outburst has brought about a cultural revolution. Many establishment figures feel that they now have a whole new freedom of expression. Subtly, almost imperceptibly, linguistic constraints have been relaxed across the whole spectrum of public life.
My husband and I would like at this time of year to extend our warmest greetings to all parts of the Commonwealth, except for New Zealand, which is crap. We had a bloody awful time now last year, because after 9 o'clock, it's impossible to get pissed.
But the sudden fashionability of swearing has made the work of political commentators who are still bound by broadcasting standards increasingly difficult.
Tempers were raised today at Prime Minister's question time as the leader of the opposition attacked the Prime Minister over her mismanagement of the economy. Mrs. Thatcher replied with one word, an accusation of maternal incest.
Some politicians, of course, have found it harder than others to adjust to this new style of political speech.
No botheration. Sugar. Lordy, lordy.
Now look, Sir Geoffrey, there's no point in coming to swearing classes if you're not even prepared to say the word damn.
Oh, golly gosh.
Now here's a good technique.
Think back to your past. Perhaps there was some boy who always bullied you, someone you really hate but could never say it. Just imagine they're here now and just say whatever you've always wanted to say to them.
You...
Go on, Jeffrey.
You sack of shit.
Great!
Margaret.
As the airwaves have become more earthy, a new honesty has entered the world of the media. The show Wogan is to be retitled simply Wanker. As are Sunday Sunday, the South Bank Show, Top of the Pops, and the whole output of Sky Television. Similarly, advertising has demonstrated a new bluntness. Some recent slogans for products include Listerine combats farty breath, Kleenex mops up your snot and you can use it as toilet paper if you run out, and Preparation H, it goes up your arse. And remarkably, this trend has even entered into the world of religious television. Harry Secombe has left Highway to be replaced by another fat ex-comedian.
Hello, welcome to Highway. This week I'm in Milford Haven, which I think you'll agree with me, Vicar, is a frigging shithole. Seems to be populated entirely by retards. You know, do I live here? I don't know. So I'm going to sing one of those maintain the oppression of the working classes with fancies about an afterlife where everybody lives in Hampstead songs, known as hymns. Here we go then. I love Jesus, he's bloody marvellous, God's freaking wonderful too. Oh, and now please welcome my comedy grandson, Mark Thomas.
This is the bit of the show where I discuss the topic of the week and I come amongst you and get your views and opinions about the topic, and you sit there going, oh God, oh God, oh God. The topic I wanted to discuss this week is death. Cheerful, kind of light-hearted topic. Mainly because I can't handle the afterlife thoughts. I just can't handle the thought of eternal life is just so boring. Whether on heaven or in hell. You know, if you go up to heaven, you know, for eternal life, and there's St. Peter at the gates going, I'm 1,989 years old and I've never had a penny off the state. You're gonna get good. We didn't have those things in my day. We didn't have videos. We made our own entertainment in my day. We had fishes and loaves. That's all we had to play with in my day. And there's God going, no, no, in my day, all we had in the beginning was the word. That's all we had in my day, mate. The other thing I don't like about the afterlife is the thought that if you're good, you go to heaven. And if you're bad, you go to hell. What happens if you're boring? You come back and haunt us. This ghostly figure going, I've missed the 8:25 to Croydon. Have you seen the price of frozen peas? And if we go to the east wing, we can still see the shimmering, glowing cagoule of the headless train spotter. Oh, I can't handle that stuff. The weirdest thing about death, though, is the way that we treat it, the way that we bury people or cremate people. I think modern technology will eventually take over. And you have adverts going, why bury or cremate your parents when you can freeze-dry them? Yes, sirree, turn them into an art deco objet. Yes, is it a coffee table? No, it's dead. Brilliant. Because funerals are just such a drag. I really get annoyed by funerals. I get very emotive about them. 50 minutes without a cigarette really just drives me mad. And I think we ought to treat funerals differently. I think we ought to treat them with more fun. Get people drinking, taking photographs, video cameras, all that kind of stuff. Treat it a bit like a wedding, you know. Sort of have the undertakers in the pub beforehand with their arms around the coffin. You know, just on the back of the hearse, just dead in red lipstick. You know? That'd be brilliant. That'd be great. Get the vicar completely stoned out of his head on some good dope. And he's up there in the pulpit going, what are you looking at? What are you looking at, eh? Be great stuff, man. You know, the pallbearers all dressed up in the Blues Brothers outfits, trying to get off with the choir. That'd be amazing. You wouldn't send flowers, send strippograms or something. That would be lovely. I know one thing, though, about funerals, and that is when I die, if my mum's still alive, she'll put my death certificate on the mantelpiece next to the 100 yards breaststroke. Suck. If you die, it's not the fact that you die, it's how you die that counts. I want a death, my death, to really inconvenience people. That's what I want. I want to have a heart attack just as I'm being cashed up at the 8 items or less queue. Tracy, customer fatality, checkout 5. So anyway, we're going to go around and get some of your thoughts and ideas about death and the afterlife and spiritual, deep, moving things. So let's ask, first of all, have you got any idea of how you would like to die?
No.
Now I want to be surprised. Okay, have you got any? We'll ask you, have you got any ideas?
Suicide.
Uh-oh. Oh, no, I hate it when Joy Division fans sneak in. Let's have a look. Have you got any ideas of how you'd like to die?
I think quietly, nicely, and dead.
Quietly, nicely, and dead? Okay, that's a bit weird, isn't it? Quietly and nicely. The thing about dying quietly and nicely is relatives will come round. And they'll all be walking around. You'll be dying quietly, and you want your famous last words. You want to say, I love you all. And they'll be walking around going, oh, he said I could have that. Oh, he would have wanted me to have that. They've arrived with a great big Pickford's van outside. Oh, no. So has anyone got any thoughts on the afterlife? We'll ask you, have you got any thoughts on the afterlife?
Not a lot, no.
God, you've given spiritual concern a lot of consideration, haven't you? All right, I want to ask you a few more questions. First of all, has anyone got any idea of how they'd like heaven to be, what they'd like heaven to be? Have you got any ideas what you'd like heaven to be like?
I haven't really thought about it much.
You sick bastards, isn't it?
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
This week in Geneva, the arms negotiations proved once again the vital role of interpreters in international diplomacy. There was one to translate Mr. Gorbachev into English, and one to translate Mr. Bush into English.
President Bush is fast emerging as a man who is about as good at finishing sentences as Ronnie Biggs. Asked what a partial arms reduction meant, the leader of the Western world replied,
partial is partial, and any other definition misses the boat.
Bush is hoping to eliminate all English grammar within a 3-year timetable. Meanwhile, however, NATO appear to have made great progress. At first sight, the conference conclusions seem like good news. However, I have with me Professor Ernest Pershing, who has helped compile the latest edition of Jane's Fighting Ships, Jane's Military Aircraft, Jane's Semi-Automatic Belt-Fed Ballistic Projectile Launchers, and Jane's Big Bastard Eat Lead and Death Commie Scum Nuclear Bombs. All books read avidly by Margaret Thatcher. Professor, I gather you suspect this arms deal is not worth as much as it first appears.
Well, no. Frankly, I feel the public are being misled.
Really? In what way?
Well, firstly, let's take the reduction in short-range weapons.
Well, surely that's a good thing.
Well, it all depends on how you define short range. If you read the agreement carefully, you'll find it's defined as a weapon with a range of less than 10 feet.
10 feet, so it doesn't actually cover missiles.
Well, yes, it does, because a number of our missiles do have a range of less than 10 feet.
Which ones?
The ones that don't work properly.
Ah, right. So what about the large reductions in conventional weapons?
Well, it is true that there will be a sizable reduction there, but what we are not told is this is only because of a major increase in unconventional weapons.
Unconventional weapons?
Yes, yes, for example, green socks stuffed with ball bearings, plastic explosive condoms, and shock ices filled with raw uranium.
Yes, and the Soviets have these,
do they? Oh, yes, 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 and they've also been busy infiltrating Britain with a sinister new form of limpet mine.
What, the ones that stick to the hulls of ships?
Yes, indeed, indeed, but the cunning part is, these Russian limpet mines are disguised as Garfields. Yes. We believe that thousands of these are already in position.
So, if they all went off...
Exactly! Every old Ford Escort in the country would have its windows blown up.
Well, thank you, Professor Ernest Pershing, who currently holds the chair of Barking Mad Paranoia at the University of Nottingham, and is a senior defence advisor to the Conservative Party.
Right, now it's time for the punchline experience. Before the show, the studio audience were asked to come up with a punchline to the following joke. What did the cricket umpire say when he saw the streaker, Sheila Nichols? So we're going to have the Sun sub-editors in today, I should think. Now, once I've sorted this out, we've got the reflected the punchlines on bits of paper, which I have in my hand, and the best one will win a prize, a video collection of the entire series of Going for Gold. Here we go. What did the cricket umpire say when he saw the streaker? I'm sure there were 3 stumps before you came on. That's disgusting, I think. I'm not sure, but I think that's disgusting.
It's by a bloke called Jay Tinkle, so it probably is. What did the cricket umpire say when he saw the streaker? Who let Princess Margaret into the bar anyway? It's good, that. It's by Steve Punt, however, who's already won about 5 competitions, so that doesn't count. What did the cricket umpire say when he saw the streaker? This way to Brighton, madam. That's by Andrew Lewis, and I think it's some sort of 30s comedian's catchphrase, as hard as I can make out. This way to Brighton, madam. Not funny, like most 30s comedians' catchphrases. Batsman, make sure your helmet does not blow off. Or no ball. Yeah, no ball. Yeah. Darling, how many times have I told you not to bother me when I'm working? Oh, dear. That's from Clive Bryant. You're not allowed on here without an MCC tie. That's all right. Leslie Bywater. Yeah, this is a good one. What did the cricket umpire say when he saw the streaker? Christ, what a lovely pair of knockers. Well... And then the other thing is written, well, that's what I'd say. Granty boy. Granty boy, what a lad, eh? What did the cricket umpire say when he saw the streaker? Nothing, he just got a huge stiffy. Fantastic. The only radio show to use the word stiffy, I can tell you that. Right, I think that's it, and I think that one's won. So Lindsay wins the entire video collection of Going for Gold. Big round for Lindsay, please.
And now it's time for another edition of our weekly situation comedy, all cozy at home in the family house, where we find Mr. Cozy in the office at the end of a long afternoon.
Ah, Bill Cozy.
Hello, Joe Jenkins from Accounts.
Tough day?
Terrible. I've had to sit here all day opening and shutting my attaché case, rearranging blank bits of paper on my desk, putting some invoices onto the metal spike, answering the phone and going, yes, 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 but we really must have them by Thursday, raising my eyes to heaven as the bald Welsh bloke from the Fen Street gang attempts to chat up the tea lady, and now, to cap it all, I've just come in my pants.
Dear BBC, why, oh, why, oh, why, is the structure of my chromosomes. Yours sincerely, William Woolard.
Oh, dear.
Listen, Joe, do you know I've worked here for 35 years, and in all that time I've never had any idea what it is that I do.
Why don't you have a word with the boss?
Don't you know, Joe? I think I will.
Ah, Cozy. Did you want to see me?
Yes, boss. Well, the thing is, I've worked here for 35 years, and in all that time I've never received a single wage packet.
Don't think that hasn't gone unnoticed, Bill.
In fact, I've often paid to come into work. And you may remember that in June 1972, rather than take a day off work, I had a tracheotomy performed at my desk.
That's right.
Also, during the strike of 1981, I was the only person who still came into work, and as a result, I've been called a scab ever since, not only by the rest of the workforce, but also by you.
Too right, Bill.
And on a number of occasions, I worked overtime procuring you various hard drugs and animal pornography. Despite the fact that you've never expressed any interest in either.
It's the thought that counts, Bill.
Well, sir, I just thought that perhaps...
Say no more, Bill. It just so happens that I've been looking at your record, and I'm pleased to say that I'm now in a position to do something I should have done a very long time ago.
Ah, thank you, sir.
I'm going to shoot you. We don't want loonies working here.
Hello, darling. Are you home?
No, I'm in bloody Timbuktu.
Oh, dear. Sounds like you had a bad day at the office.
No, I am in bloody Timbuktu. I got on the wrong bloody train. Luckily, Chief Limpopo has managed to rig up a video satellite.
Oh, holla, flip-dip on, chubble-dip.
He says he's just been watching Morris Minor's Marvellous Motors.
Hobbler hobba, shimmit fwang.
And he's decided to kill himself.
Well, as Mr. Cozy does the honours and sets fire to Chief Limpopo on the back of a rhinoceros, we bid goodbye to all cozy at home in the family house.
You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Mark Thomas, Joe Brand and Skint Video. The production assistant was Barbara Keir, the sound was by Martha Knight and the producer was Bill Dare.